You're listening to a podcast by the United Nations Research Institute for Social Development.
So now the floor is to Mr. Golam Sarwar. I just say a few words before you will speak about the paradoxes of social entrepreneurship. Please, you have the floor. 15 minutes.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for your comments. I mean, before I start, and I don't have a PowerPoint presentation, so I will depend on my voice. There is no text there, so I hope that you all, I mean, you're just listening to me clearly. So if that is the case, I start now. I think after Ananda's very enthusiastic presentation, I think my presentation is rather skeptical. I'm not skeptical about social entrepreneurship, but from my paper, it seems like I raised some questions about the modus operandi of social entrepreneurship. So I will try to explain the context and with the theory that I have in mind. So what we mean by social entrepreneurship today? So I will start with the contextualization of the fact that we have this concept long before, but now we talk about social entrepreneurship in a new realities. So some of the authors says that it began at just beginning of the 19th century. So, but the form of social entrepreneurship at that time and the form of social entrepreneurship today, as we speak about social and solidarity economy and also in the framework of post-2015 development agenda, obviously the social entrepreneurship as a concept is somehow different than it was before. So I think for this reason and for other reason, like, we have numerous definitions, numerous scholarship about social entrepreneurship. So to avoid that, to summarize those concepts or to compile those concepts is a huge task. To avoid this huge task and also to give a contextual definition, I choose to understand social entrepreneurship in the current context. So what is social entrepreneurship today? So the contextualization is, like, I argue that we should look at social entrepreneurship, the recent development of social entrepreneurship, in two phases. The first phase is the aftermath of a structural adjustment program, and also the second phase is after the crisis, recent crisis. So what happened with the structural adjustment program? In a nutshell, I know everybody aware of the social structural adjustment program. In a nutshell, we have pursued in the 80s and 90s a kind of reform measures through privatization, deregulation, and also through the fiscal adjustment, so that it was a market-based initiative, and we tried to formulate the market in a way that we believed that the market will serve the best for the people. So there will be a trickle down. So this is the theoretical explanation for the measures. And that did not work very well. The understanding of structural adjustment and the evaluation of the program was frustrating for many developing countries. So in that context, and also social entrepreneurship, in the structural adjustment program, we were talking about the market and we were proposing, we were prescripting sometimes that government should roll back from the market so that market can function efficiently. So that was efficiency concern. In that context, we have government rollback in many developing countries, and also government was not present in the market and they become weak in the social business, social spheres. That gives rise a voice, a call for inclusive social policies in the economic sphere. So as the countries pursue such a policy that social development become residual, so they wanted to try to push some kind of corrective measures like social safety net and other things. That did not work very well. So there was a call in general to have an inclusive social policy in the economic sphere. So that was the first phase. And the second phase is our economic crisis. In the economic crisis, in a nutshell, I mean, it's a very generalized observation. Still we are in the recession in Europe at least. So I think there are three things happened that is very significant, and that is related to the recent talk about recent emphasis on the social entrepreneurship. First one is the governments. Governments become financially weak. In developed countries, even in developing countries, they were before weak, they become more weak. Because of the crisis, GDP, and effect on the real sector, and other things. The second, I'm not going detailed on these issues. The second thing is the traditional entrepreneurships, like big banks and other financial institutions, they went bankrupt, some of them. They were struggling to sustain. So there was a losing face of the traditional entrepreneurships. There is a second one. And third one, I started with the call for a inclusive social policy, and that got momentum here, and we found there are so many movements, Occupy Wall Street and other movements. So the idea of social inclusion or idea of inclusive social development become a prominent idea more than before. Now, in this context, if we juxtapose social entrepreneurship in this context, we'll find a very interesting picture. And the picture is social entrepreneurship is a panacea. So they satisfy everyone. And how? Now, if social entrepreneurs, as the government become weak, they want to leeway some of their responsibilities. If there is a sector that can take the responsibility and effectively deliver the social goods, government are very happy because they have financial problems. So this is a one-win situation for governments. The second winning situation for the entrepreneurs, entrepreneurs lose their face, traditional banking sector and other financial sector. So if the entrepreneur have a chance to partnership with social goods so social services, then that can reestablish their credibility. So that is the second win situation for the traditional entrepreneurships. And third one is the equity and justice. So we were calling for equity and justice, and social entrepreneurship can deliver equity and justice because they will be solving the social problems, they will be cooperate with the local communities, and the whole concept of social entrepreneurship comes into from the equity and justice justice perspective. So there is a win-win-win-win situation. So everybody is happy. That's why social entrepreneurship comes to a point that everybody seems very enthusiastic. So in that context, differing the ideas of social entrepreneurship is difficult. It's because we don't have any theory still, because the idea is still evolving. And so I just want to put some views that is within the context. That's why I titled my paper as Paradoxes. That means what you say by social entrepreneurship, somehow you contradict with what you say. So I have three paradoxes here regarding social entrepreneurship. One is the paradoxes of accountability. So first concept is accountability paradox. What I mean by that is social entrepreneurship will deliver the social good. Now, just before that, I just want to summarize the definition now, right? So we found social entrepreneurship, three basic characteristics. One is like they will solve the social problems, the first one. The second is they will not be, okay, I will be very brief now. So second one is, but the contextualization was important, okay. So the second one is, they will be financially sustainable because they are not the NGOs, they are entrepreneurs. The concept of entrepreneurs is different than the CSR and the NGO realms. And also, I think it is also somehow different from the cooperatives. We have the presentation in the morning that how far we can go with the cooperatives into the context of social and solidarity economies. So that is a totally different. That is entrepreneurship. And third one is, so these entrepreneurships are financially sustainable and non-profitable. So non-profitability based financial sustainability. So this is the second point. And third point is, they didn't say explicitly, but we can assume from the context of the social entrepreneurship now is that they are resilient to the crisis. So if crisis happen, they will not go bust like banks and other institutions, and they will sustain. So these are the three principles, and these three principles led to three paradoxes. I'll be very brief. First one is the accountability paradox. So who will be the accountable? I mean, social entrepreneurship will deliver the social goods. Now we have in a modern state, we have a social contract with the citizen and the government. So if I have a problem with education, I have a problem with health, I have the other problem with other social services, I just ask the government, what are you doing? So in case of social entrepreneurship, how are we gonna accountable them? Now, the presumption for this argument is that in many developing countries, NGOs are already delivering some of the goods and services, social goods and services, and there is a chance that if the social entrepreneurship get hold in the developing countries because of the weakness of the government and their inability and corruption and other many other things, they will be the sole provider of the services. Now, I have two scenarios. If the government is weak and the social entrepreneurship is successful, because that is one of the conditions. If the government is very weak, social entrepreneurship will be successful. In that case, how you can make them accountable what they're doing? Because we have some examples, like from the NGOs, that some of the projects were initially good, but the long run effect was not that good. We have water issue in Bangladesh. So with the tube oil project from the donors. So, I mean, initially they're good, but essentially they're not good in the long run. So there is a long run and short run dichotomy. How are you going to address this? The second is, if the government go crowd out, I mean, they just leave the market for the social entrepreneurs, if that social entrepreneurs fail, how government will reinstall the services? Because these services are necessary for the poor people, poorest of the poor people. Say education, say health, say other issues. So in a scenario, it's all hypothetical scenario, but in a scenario when government is already crowded out from the market, how they gonna reinstall their service if that is necessary because of the failure of the social entrepreneurship? So that is the accountability paradox. Then we have the second paradox is excludability paradox. Now we are talking about social and solidarity economics. Social and solidarity. The one of the basis of the social and solidarity economics is the inclusion. So you have to include the poorest of the poor and try to enable them to break the cycle of the poverty and other things, other miseries. Now, if you want to be financially sustainable, there is no more ways to do the business other than charging a fee. Now, if you charge a fee, how are you going to ensure that the poorest of the poor have the access? Now you can say, oh, I will reduce the fee. There is a limitation because you can't go for the economic of scale because the very concept of social entrepreneurship is locally based. So you have no leverage to go for a big scale of production. So that is one of the things. And other thing is, if you think of cross-subsidization, like you make revenue from other sources and subsidize the social entrepreneurship, that is like CSR. We have a problem with the social corporate social responsibility. So that is the second paradox, that is excludability paradox. And the third paradox, and very brief, I'm taking maybe one more minute. I'm sorry for that.
Two more minutes.
Okay, thank you. That is the resiliency paradox. That
you take.
He didn't give you. He said he was taking.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm just finishing now. So third one is the resiliency paradox. That is what we are saying, that social entrepreneurships are more resilient for of the crisis. But I argue in my paper that there is no theoretical understanding of how social entrepreneurship will be more resilient. I still think that there are empirical evidences, as our chair mentioned, but the thing is, as a standalone concept, I don't think cooperative is replicable to the social entrepreneurship, because this is a different discussion, but that is a membership-based, totally different entity. So I don't know how far our experience from the cooperative can be included in the social entrepreneurship as a standalone idea, I'm not sure. And also, we have very recently some of the social entrepreneurs that went bust. And I can refer you the Liam Black's article in The Guardian. So the social entrepreneurship that was awarded by David Cameron as a champion of the big society, it just went bust. So we are not sure. We have to take some more example. I think one thing is to be very precise here is we always stuck with the agency dynamics of the issue. Like we always refer Skoll Foundation, we always refer Ashoka Foundation, also Mahmoud Yunus. I mean, as a standalone concept, we have to be objective and not subjective to the agency. I mean, these people are extraordinary people. We don't expect that all these social entrepreneurship will be Mahmoud Yunus. I mean, so in this remark, I want to finish it. I mean, yeah, thank you very much.
Check out our other podcasts available free on the iTunes Store. For more information, go to our website, www.unriz.org. Thank you for listening.